people should not be coming to therapy to learn about how their body and their mind works and how to regulate themselves. Like, it shouldn't be, we shouldn't have to be learning these things when we are an adult. Because then we've already probably made so much, we've already done so much damage to ourselves and to other people. And like, there needs to be a preventative measure. And I don't know what that looks like. You know, I think it looks like you being on TikTok and helping parents out so that kids don't end up coming to therapy with me when they're older.
And if you want to be a part of the conversation too, then subscribe to my Patreon, www.patreon.com/Mr. Chaz, and join the conversation. Ask your own questions. Be a part of it for as low as $5 a month and get access to one-on-one coaching with me for as low as $20 a month. Welcome to Mr. Chaz's Leadership, Parenting, and Teaching podcast, where I introduce you to the resources that can help you on your journey. And the resource that I'm introducing you to this week is the Truth Doctor. Her real name is Dr. Courtney Tracy. She has 1.7 million followers on TikTok. She's also the 2021 Wellness and Nutrition Influencer of the Year. It's safe to say that she's breaking barriers in the mental health community. There's so many powerful things said in this conversation about authenticity, boundaries, parenting perspectives, the brain. But one thing that I really wanted to tease out, what made someone mean, be mean? And she said, it's because people don't value themselves, and so that's why they treat others that way. Which is such a huge revelation when we talk about generational cycles, because we know that we end up treating ourselves the way that we were treated growing up. And so the way we're treating others is a direct result from the way that we were treated growing up. And then the cycle goes on and on and on. So there's so much powerful stuff in here. Hope you enjoy. Leave a review.
What's my name? What's my name? What's my name?
Well, thank you so much for having me on. Yes, my name is Dr. Courtney Tracy. I am known on the internet as the Truth Doctor. I am a licensed clinical social worker and a doctor of clinical psychology. And I used to work in the addiction field, and I owned two addiction treatment centers that I recently sold. And right now I am just came out with the Truth Doctor show, and as of recent, the Truth Doctor podcast. And my intention for being here is to help people find the truth, their own truth, not the truth that has been decided and created for them by society and all of the teachers in their lives. So their parents, actual teachers, other family members, and sometimes even friends.
Yeah. And so we were just talking right before we started recording, and I asked you about your why. And so I'm just going to ask you again. And I love the way you described it. You can describe it again any way that you want, but tell me about your why. Why are you here? Why are you putting so much time and effort and energy into helping people see the truth? Tell us a little bit about your why and your vision for the future even.
Yeah. Well, thank you. When it comes to me being a therapist, you know what I definitely just shared right before we started recording, but I think a place that I'll start is that when I was 5 years old, I realized that I was very aware of how other people were feeling, and I always questioned why people did the things that they did. I have a very prominent core memory from when I was five, when I saw other young boys picking on a Hispanic boy in my class. And I specifically went up to them and was like, stop bullying him. Like, you know, like, this is so wrong. And I remember being like, why are they treating him like that? Now that I'm a social worker and a doctor of clinical psychology, I have a pretty good idea of what society is like and why they might have been doing that. But that really started my journey of wondering why people treat people the way that they do. I also developed anxiety and lived in a very chaotic and abusive household when I was growing up. So I always wondered why my parents did, why my parents did the things that they did, and really why the world was the way that it was. And those questions never went away for me. I did pretty good in school, but school never answered those questions for me. So, and they were the questions like, why are we on this planet? How does our body work? What is this voice inside my head? Why are people so mean to each other? Why do people use substances? basically all of the questions about our existence. And when I was 13, I found substances because no one was helping me find the answers to those questions. So I wanted to numb myself so that I could kind of get them out of my head. And after I realized that that was really non-conducive to healing and finding the answers, I found psychology. And I realized that there was a really large group of people in the world that were trying to answer those questions. And getting those questions answered to me means alleviation of symptoms. But more than that, it means prevention of symptoms. I'm here to help people find answers to the questions that will help lead them to the truth.
So super, I love starting off these conversations with super general open questions, and this will be no different. Why are, in your experience, why are you talked about the child who you're picking on the boy, and you notice, so have you kind of answered those questions now? Like, why are people mean? In a general sense, kind of talk a little bit about that. Why are people mean to each other?
Well, you know, I think that most therapists would come up with the interpersonal reason of why people are mean to each other, because they're judging each other or because they disagree with each other. You know, the things for the actual interaction of what's happening where the meanness is taking place. I'm the type of therapist that goes, thinks way more existentially, way more like universally. Like, people are mean to each other because they don't know who they are themselves. They don't respect themselves. And so they don't actually know who anybody else is. And so they can't really respect anybody else either. And so people are mean because they don't value themselves, and therefore they don't value other people.
Wow. That's really powerful. People are mean because they don't value themselves, so they don't value other people. So you're saying that the person who is, you know, the person who has maybe road rage, right? Because that's something that happens. Sometimes you right. meet people and they're, you know, the nicest people. And so they get in a car and they're on the highway. And then you're like, wow, who is this person that I thought I knew? Like, you seem so nice. And now one thing happened, and, you know, you're cursing out someone else. Now I see a reactive part. It kind of comes from, you know, people not really being kind of almost centered or grounded on who they are. And maybe to your point too, I would also maybe add, or maybe it's what you're saying, not just who they are, but how they fit into the world. And an understanding of the world, right? And an understanding of things that are happening to them, around them. What would you say to that?
I mean, it's like, when I say that people don't value themselves, it's like, you know, people are either mean because they're not connected to like the fact that they matter. So then other people don't matter, but they also could not be valuing themselves because maybe someone's been really mean to them. You know, let's say generational issues. My parents were terrible to me, and no one ever allowed me to say that that wasn't okay and to talk about how that hurt me. And so I'm not going to value myself as someone that deserves to be cared for. And so now I don't know how to acknowledge and value and care for my child, because no one's ever taught me how to do that. And so I think it's disconnection, and it's realizing that you matter a lot more than you think. Like, be mean to this person, it doesn't matter. No, it really, really matters. Like, if you cut somebody off on the road and they're already having a bad day and they're on their way to pick up their kid from daycare, you made their day worse. And now they're going to go pick up their kid from daycare, and maybe their kid's having a tantrum, and now they're going to react differently to their child because you cut them off on the road. You matter more than you think you do. And that's both a good thing and not a good thing.
It's with great power comes great responsibility, right?
Yeah. But we all have great power. That's what people don't realize. It's like, we do. Like, you are impacting everyone around you. Even if you never will know how, everyone around you, most specifically your children. So I'm glad that you exist, because you're really you're doing the work. Because every client I have ever seen, and I've worked with 18 and over, every client that I've ever seen has once been a child. And I really think that people need to realize that every adult in therapy was once a child. And more than likely, their childhood is part of the reason, at least the baseline or the foundation of what led them to therapy today.
Hmm. Yeah. And really help them form how they see the world and, yeah, you know, who they are and their personality, and if they're going to be reactive to that person who is, you know, just cut them off on the street or on the road. Right. And so that cycle is just continues to spread. And I always, like, one of the things, like, for me that, like, such a long time ago that I realized of just, yeah, the power that I had as a teacher. And, you know, we were talking earlier, I was talking about, like, how my North Star has always been, like, kind of impact. And when I became a teacher, it was, yes, it was about me impacting the little humans I was spending 8+ hours with a day. It was that. I'm growing the next generation of humans through, you know, 20 children that I have in my class. But it was also me acknowledging and knowing that those little humans are going to go out in the world and impact a bunch of other little humans and big humans. And that's going to have a ripple effect too. And so even just, like, I love that example of just, like, with the one person cutting someone off, and then the person, the parent, getting angry and picking up their child off, picking up their child. And now they're maybe a little bit more reactive, or they're taking out on their child. Now that's impacting the rest of their day or their evening. And then also when you get home, the sister is impacting their sister. And then that can even still carry off in the next day, or maybe a big event. Like, there's so much. I really resonate with that. Like, we do have so much power. I want to get to some of the questions. I want to sprinkle in, because my community really jumped at the opportunity to ask questions. And I want to kind of answer some of these together, because there were some pretty good ones. And you have a 2.5-year-old?
I do.
Yes. Okay, cool. So great. You can, this will be great. So I'm going to ask this one first. Is it appropriate to protect our kids around toxic, bad people and ask/tell them they're not allowed to be associated around those people that are in their circle group? I do not want to give them the idea that it's okay for people to be mean to us and hurt us, and then be friendly and pretend everything is okay without no real talk or apology. That's how I grew up. Bruising things or brushing things to the side instead of fixing it. I don't want to give that idea to my child. How could I tell her who she is allowed to speak to or communicate with and who she isn't in order to protect her mental and emotional health? Especially when I know those exact same people have the ability to hurt in the same way they hurt me. And so that is the question. What are your thoughts, Dr. Courtney? Well, Tracy?
Well, the first thing that comes up for me is how old is the kid? Because, well, one, I guess, is it appropriate? Yes. I think that it is appropriate. And I think it depends on the age yes, it's appropriate. And I want to say thank you for not wanting to continue on a pattern that you experienced in your childhood with your child. The next thing I would say is consider the age. It is difficult for me to answer, because, like, if they're 15, it's totally different than if they're 3. But I kind of want to answer as if the kid's young. What do you think?
Let's say the child's 5 years old. Let's say the child's 5 years old.
Okay. 5 to 8. 5 to 8. Well, you know, between 5 and 8, children are usually, that's when they can start to learn rules. They can kind of start to anticipate the future, understand what you're talking about when it comes to, like, if this happens now, then something might happen in the future. I can go ahead.
Yeah, I can kind of share with my, and you know, talking about, let's assume the child is 5, 6, 7, or 8. Yeah. You know, my big thing with this, and this comes up a lot when it gets to like, what do I do on the playground? And my perspective is that we can give children the tools to navigate certain situations. But we also have to give them an opportunity to use those tools. And there are going to be times where children, you know, where their feelings are going to be hurt, right, by other children. Someone's going to say something that's not nice to them, and their feelings are going to be hurt. And I don't think it's, you know, always us as the adult. It's always our job to like step in and even intervene in the moment. I think some things, I would say there are boundaries around some things. Physical violence, like physically hitting, definitely intervene. And I would say, if I'm hearing name calling, because that just gets into like shame and self-worth. And those are kind of two things that I would intervene and set boundaries. But otherwise, if it's, you know, maybe just like, I don't want to be your friend anymore, right? And maybe someone's setting, you know, bonded the weed, or I do want to be a friend, or I don't want to be a friend, or I don't like, you know, all like kind of those things that children typically will do or say to each other, and their feelings are hurt, like that's okay, right? Because I think that, you know, children are going to experience, you know, emotional turmoil, you know, throughout their lives. And our job and our role is really to help them process it and work through it and give them tools to work and to navigate, and maybe some things to say to that, you know, toxic friend or, but I would say that it's not really our role to control, unless, and as long as, you know, I think it's, the question is a little ambiguous. And so like, I think if it's a situation where, you know, like their child's going to be in an environment that is harmful or neglectful or abusive, that's a whole different thing. But if we're talking about someone, a child not being a good friend to your child, that's gotta be your child's choice. And at some point, you know, you can help them process it and be a safe space to help them work through, what, you know, what was said to them or what happened, give them tools to navigate it, and then allow them to work through and allow your child to break off that relationship with that friendship that it sounds like it is, or not be a part of that friend group anymore. I think that's really a decision that the child has to make, but not the adult.
Yeah, I agree with you. And yeah, I think that like where I was having difficulty answering was like, I couldn't tell if this was kids being mean to the kid or if it was like family members, because it's like, that's who I grew up. I pushed it to the side. And then it said something like, I don't want them to think that people can be mean to us. And I'm like, so that seems to me because the us. And so I think if it's a family member that used to do the same thing to you, because here's the thing, I was at one of the first family gatherings in a while this weekend, and I had this aunt that was she's just like rude. And when I was younger, I remember saying to her, you're the worst aunt in the world. Like, cause she, and I really felt that way at the time. Now it's not so extreme. Hanging around her this weekend, and he, you know, has a very particular temperament. He's very sensitive. He likes things a certain way. And she's the type of adult that was like, oh, who cares? Like, if he gets upset, whatever, it's not even that big of a deal. He's way too serious about it. And I was like, you're not going to do that to him like you did that to me. And I was like, listen, we're going to go play outside, because it's just, my child's not going to change for your comfort. And this shouldn't even be affecting your comfort in any way. And so in that instance, I think you do have a right to say, like, you have a right to prevent the relationship, but it matters how you do it. Like, yes, if you want to prevent the relationship, because you know, it's impacted your life long-term, and you know that as a child, you didn't have those skills, and there might be skills that you can't develop at whatever age the child's at. Right. So if you want to set that boundary, right, exactly. So then you set the boundary. And I think but you just explain it in a way, like it just really depends. If they're super young, you don't need to be like, well, this aunt, when she talked to me like that when I was little, it hurt my feelings. It's just like, we're not going to hang around that auntie right now. Let's go hang out with this auntie. This auntie has cool toys and she's, you know, so it just depends like how much you expose them to and how much they can handle. But yeah, I think you have the right to set boundaries if you know it's going to be impact emotionally. That's not normal. It's not normal for the developmental age. It's like, of course, kids are going to be mean and you got to work out how to handle it. But if a family member is treating your child poorly, then I think you step in some way.
I agree 100%. And I think even with the setting the boundary, I think you can also even be proactive about that. If you know you're going to family gathering, you have the aunt, I think you can even do, you know, like the phone call ahead of just like, hey, these are my boundaries kind of going in. And these is like, if he doesn't want to hug, like, right. You know, I need you to accept that. Like, I need you to you know, accept his boundary that he's setting. He has control, autonomy over his own body, and he'll give you a hug when he's ready. And I think doing that ahead of time on the front end can be helpful, but even intervening like in the moment when the child's trying to set a boundary with the skills that he has of just maybe even if it's just a shoulder, just like, and you're not using the world, and you know, like you can see when a child, especially with your child, when they're uncomfortable and they're trying to set a boundary and that's not something that they want, then you can step in and you can almost model setting that boundary and using those words that he may eventually use. Like he doesn't, you know, so-and-so doesn't want to hug right now, but you know, he'll maybe, you know, maybe he'll want a high five or maybe he'll do a hug later, right?
Right.
And that's where I go. Let's do another question. This one is about fear. And this one, they actually say the age of the child.
Cool.
My four-year-old has a lot of fear. Fear of the dark, being alone, talking to people she isn't familiar with, trying new things. It seems like some days are mostly just trying to overcome fears to do daily tasks. Should I let go and just accept it for who she is or continue to try to overcome her fears? What are your thoughts?
Well, fear is anxiety. So I think that a parent would probably start by trying to use words to help this fear. But anxiety lives in the body too. And so I don't think that it's something that you necessarily need to just accept for who she is. I wouldn't try to change her because it's not working for you. I guess what I'm trying to say is like often parents want kids to reduce their emotions at the speed with which the parent needs the emotion reduced. And that is just not helpful for the children. It has to be at the pace that they're capable of changing or understanding. So with a four-year-old, it could be the start of anxiety. It doesn't mean that you did something to make that happen. Often they can just have anxiety. And so I think that you should start to ask about what it feels like in the body. Like, oh, are you scared right now? What's happening to your heart? Is your heart beating faster? Are you breathing? Are you holding your breath? Are you breathing really fast? Like, and kind of make it like this thing where the child gets to explore what's going on in the body during the fear. And then, however you can pull that out, like if you're breathing really fast, then your breath is coming out as a rainbow. If you're holding your breath, then it's not coming out at all. And there's no rainbow, whatever you need to do so that you can get the information from the kid of what's happening in their body. And then once you know what that is, then you can start to help in that moment. So instead of saying, it's okay, you don't have to be afraid. Kids don't really understand that when they're young. They're like, they don't understand that they don't have to be afraid. All they know is that they are in that moment. Yeah. And if you can't get them out of their head, then try to get them out of their body response. So teach them deep breathing. Like, but it doesn't have to be like, you have to sit still and you have to breathe in for 4 seconds and then out for 4 seconds. It's like when she's not afraid, then just be like, hey, guess what? I want to teach you something new. It's called deep breathing. It's super cool. I'll do it first and then you can copy me. And you do it when it's not needed. And then when it is needed, then you could say, hey, let's do that thing. You remember that thing when we were deep breathing and the rainbow was coming out or whatever you develop. And then the body talks to the brain. So if the brain is having a hard time talking to the body and you're like, okay, I'm supposed to be okay, I'm supposed to be okay, but I'm not, then try forcing it the other way, and not with force, but to, you know, force the message. So slow down the breathing, lay down, and just like lay down for like 2 minutes, wherever you are. This is another thing that I think that parents do often is we really adhere to the rules of society. Like if we're walking with our kid on the sidewalk and they're throwing a tantrum or they're really sad or whatever it is, you're like, well, we can handle this. Let's say not a tantrum, because that might be different. Let's say that they're really sad and they're just crying and they don't want to go home. And well, I'll talk to you about what you're sad about when we get home. Stop right there on the sidewalk, lay down with your kid and be like, look at the clouds, and just like be non-conventional. Get out of the rules of society. Do things differently than the way that you think that you need to. Be creative with your child. And so I think tap into the body, use the body, because parents often forget, but you have to regulate yourself first. Because even if your child can't tell you that they know that you're afraid that they're afraid, like you're anxious that they're anxious, you've got to regulate yourself, because their body knows that you're not okay. They know.
Yeah.
We mirror each other.
Yeah. Okay. So many things there that I want to talk about. Like one thing that I have to say again, that is so true. I want to see if I can get it right. You said that often parents want a child's, you know, emotions, or a child to work through their emotions at the speed that the parent needs it to happen, as opposed to what they're capable of.
Yeah.
And that is so powerful. Because it's, you know, these different situations where maybe in one situation, it may be easier for us to like, to do the unconventional thing and to like, you know, to lay down, look at the clouds and talk to the body and do all those things. But there's other times where, you know, we're late for something, or there's something that we really want to do, or, you know, there's some other kind of extrinsic outside force that is maybe even dysregulating us a little bit. And we're like, well, I don't have time to like attune to the child. So you need to get over it. So in response, it's not, how can we meet in the middle and work through, like, okay, I have time restraints, but you're also working through something. How can I figure out a way to kind of meet in the middle and help you work through it? Or, you know, instead of that, it's, you need to stop the emotion. You need to stop right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, typically tends when we go into that mode, that typically doesn't help them work through that emotion. And it might even escalate the emotion. And there's another thing that you said too, in terms of, we need to regulate ourselves before we go into these situations. And I'm going to talk about this, because there's like, you know, people will say, and in education too, and in schools, like I hear all the time, kind of like, fake it till you make it, right? Mm-hmm. And I get it. Like sometimes we have to, when we're not actually calm, we have to like, instead of like yelling, like, and I'm not advocating, like, don't, you're not calm. You know, if you're getting really upset, you're really angry, you're really dysregulated, frustrated, whatever. You know, I'm not saying to just go out and displace that emotion. But I'm also not saying that, you know, and yes, faking it can be better. So what I'm saying is, faking the emotion can be better. Faking calm can be better than just actually being dysregulated and frustrated and like attacking, but actually genuinely tapping into calm and regulation is so much more powerful, because children really can sense us and our energy and the inauthenticity of us trying to fake it until we make it. And that is hard. That's an extremely difficult thing to do, to actually, it requires us to actually have the skill, because it's a skill, right?
Of
self-regulation. And it's this cycle of you know, we don't have the skill of, it's not well practiced, not something we've mastered, maybe even something we've never thought about. We don't have the skill of self-regulation. So our child gets dysregulated, as they should a lot of the times, yeah, because they're young, they're learning, the brains are developing. So that's very normal, as they should. They get dysregulated. That dysregulation gets passed on to us because they get frustrated because they throw, you know, it's the puzzle piece won't fit, or they can't have the snack, whatever it is, gets dysregulated. Right. It goes, and then we get dysregulated. Mm-hmm. And then we'll have the tendency to create the cycle to just kind of put it back on the child as frustration, when really what we need to do is self-regulate so that we can co-regulate with the child. And doing that time and time and time and time and time again, co-regulating, yeah, us for, mm-hmm, self-regulating, co-regulating with the child, is what actually teaches and builds the skill in the body to learn to self-regulate. And then, so, you know, and then once they, and, but if we do have that skill of self-regulation and then co-regulation, and we're doing that over and over and over and over again, by the time that they're adults and their brains are fully developed, they're a lot more skilled at self-regulation and co-regulation. And so now when they have children or they're working with children, now they're able to pass on that skill because they actually, mm-hmm, genuinely, authentically have it to self-regulate, right, co-regulate, and then with the child so that they can learn to self-regulate. Mm-hmm. And so, I don't know, I just think about, like, we talked about this before, you know, another thing we talked about before, you know, we started recording, is like the work that you're doing, I feel like, is so important because of just as a therapist and doing it like on such a big scale too, because where a lot of us didn't grow up with the ability to self-regulate or to understand our own underlying needs and all these things that we're trying to teach children to do, like we were never taught to do, mm-hmm, but therapists give us kind of almost the gift or help us learn those skills as adults. And, mm-hmm, I don't know if there's any other place to learn those skills.
You know, there's not. And that's a huge problem. It's a huge problem. Like, people should not be coming to therapy to learn about how their body and their mind works and how to regulate themselves. Like, it shouldn't be, we shouldn't have to be learning these things when we are an adult. Because then we've already probably made so much, we've already done so much damage to ourselves and to other people. And like, there needs to be a preventative measure. And I don't know what that looks like. You know, I think it looks like you being on TikTok and helping parents out so that kids don't end up coming to therapy with me when they're older for those reasons. Obviously, people go to therapy for other reasons, but
yeah,
a lot of the time it's rules and belief systems and boundaries and not being able to be themselves and not knowing how to emotionally regulate. And all those things start from the day that you're born, before you're born even.
Yeah. And I'd say it's really both of us, because I think while, you know, I get the strategies and perspectives around, you know, parenting and a little bit on the kind of the psychological side and help adults understand themselves a little bit too. You do it in a whole another level that really allows people to look to understand themselves on a deeper level so that they can accept themselves, just like we were saying, so that they can accept themselves and then they can learn to accept their children too.
Right.
Because, you know, that's what's happening a lot of the time. It's yeah, I don't accept myself or the parts of me that weren't accepted as like a child. And I've kind of shut those parts of me off. And now I have a child and it's bringing up those parts of me that I, you know, right, pushed off or shut down. And, mm-hmm, and it's hard to accept this child being unapologetically who they are.
Yeah.
You haven't done that for yourself.
Completely. I think also a way for parents to look at, there's something that happens, right? You have your first child Then they reach the toddler years and you're like, oh my God. You're like, this is like, I was warned, but like, I had no idea. And I think, when we're adults, you mentioned this a little bit. Okay. So we all are humans and we have the typical ways that things work in our body and in our brain. When we get mad about something, the same chemicals come out in adults as in children, same pathways for these things happen. But when we're systems and the pathways that we have within ourselves that have not matured, that are stuck from when we were children, those automatically get mirrored when our child starts acting like that. So we literally mirror the childish patterns that are still within us. And we think that it's okay to act like that because your child acting like that. It's not okay to act like that. Your child does not have a frontal lobe that's working the same way. Your child does not have the ability to have impulse control, to think to the future, to problem solve, to emotionally regulate. You do or you should. And just because you don't doesn't mean that you can act the way that your child is acting. So often I hear, well, they were throwing a tantrum, so I was throwing a tantrum. They were screaming at me, so I started screaming at them. No. You have leveled up in life. And it's really important for you to realize that even if you don't have the ability to act differently than they do in that moment, you have the capacity to do it. Mm. And it is your job to figure it out. It's your job to figure it out. And you know, sometimes I hear people say like, well, you decided to be a parent. And it's like, there are situations where, yes, you decided to be a parent, but it didn't happen when you wanted to, or maybe not with the person that you wanted it to, or whatever it was. You are still bestowed upon you is the responsibility to raise a human being. This is a human being, with the most complex organ that we know of in this universe. You're not going to be great at it. No one's great at it. Yeah. They're literally, brain scientists do not understand the brain. And you're raising a brain, okay? You're not going to get it all. But what you can do is get yourself. Figure it out. Figure out you. Because when you figure out you, you're figuring out a human being. And guess what? That's what your child is too. You'll get a lot of insight there.
Yeah. Oh, man. I got to tease out another like quote you had there. Children don't have the ability to regulate or, you know, to problem solve in the situation. And you may not have the ability in the moment, but you do have the capacity and the responsibility to do that as an adult. And at what age? Okay, this is just, I'm curious what you, I don't know if there's a right or wrong answer. At what age do you think someone becomes responsible for, at what age does someone become responsible for their capacity to, and their responsibility to self-regulate and to problem solve? I know that the prefrontal cortex is, you know, not fully developed till 25, 26, but, you know, at 18, you are, you know, technically an adult, you can vote. Like, so what would you say? Curious what your thoughts are.
I think it depends. No one's ever asked me this question. I think it depends on the behavior, the situation, or the emotion. Like when you're, I would say maybe when you're, let's say seven, I think seven is probably good. It's a couple years and a lot of social interaction. You have more concrete operational abilities to understand rules and logic. You can know to not hit people. Like that, like you can know to not hit people and you can know to not scream at people. And, you know, but then I think like 10, 11, 12, you really understand more about the future. So then maybe you know to not steal, because then you can kind of connect it to like what that might do to the business or something, or yourself or your family. I really think that it depends. But I also think that there are limitations where if you haven't experienced something, and somebody hasn't taught you what you're supposed to do in that moment, you could be 40 and still not know how to emotionally regulate. And yes, you have the responsibility, but you have absolutely no idea how to do it. And you were never taught how to do it. Nobody ever helped you do it. So it's like, and I feel like a lot of parents are there too. It's like, okay, so you're saying that I have this responsibility and I have this capacity, but I don't actually feel like I do, because like no one has ever allowed me to express my anger, to teach me how to control my anger, to tell me when anger is appropriate, because my whole life was A, B, C, and D. And all it did was make it worse. And so now I don't know what to do to like help myself regulate.
I would say that it may not have the resources, right? Yeah. To be able to self-regulate and to do that problem solving. Yeah. Even if they do have a capacity. And, you know, I know, and I think I would even add into maybe even people with history of trauma, add that on resources too, because there may not be resources that someone who has, especially a long history of trauma, they may not have the resources in their body to really access all those things, right? Or what their body's telling them is that maybe they don't have the capacity.
Maybe not the capacity, the capability. It's like we got all these different words, but for the parent that feels like they have been through so much emotional turmoil in their life and they never got the opportunity to learn how to emotionally regulate before they had kids, which honestly does not make it easier to emotionally regulate. It makes it much more difficult because then you're regulating more emotions besides just your own. And that can be very overwhelming. Mm-hmm. Parents, like parents have to learn forgiveness. Like we have to learn forgiveness for ourselves and we have to learn forgiveness for whoever it is in your life or whatever situation got you to where you're at today as a parent that doesn't know how to emotionally regulate. And there's a difference between forgiving and letting this person back into your life or letting the behavior continue. It's letting go of this anger that you have to blame whatever was going on in your life in the past for your current situation. Like you don't have to be that child still that didn't learn how to emotionally regulate. You don't have to hold on to that resentment and that anger. You don't have to. It doesn't mean that it was okay, but it doesn't mean that you have to hold on to it, because it's going to be a barrier for you to be able to not only forgive your child for acting the way that your child is acting, but it will help prevent. It will be a barrier to prevent your child from being the same type of adult that you are carrying it around. And I don't know. I just feel like it's, when we're holding on to things that have hurt us in the past, then we hurt other people. And I know that that sounds like such a therapist thing to say, but I can't tell you how many clients I have had in my office that say, my parents still act the same, and blah, 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 blah. I'm like, okay, but you're acting the same way to your child too. It's like, because you're carrying it around. You're carrying around the memories. You're carrying around the energy. You're carrying around the resentment. And you are, in essence, still that child that's still mad about that thing. And now you're taking that anger out on your child in the same way. And you don't even realize it because you're so wrapped up in your head. Mm.
Can you, and I want to get to the next question. So if you don't have, it doesn't have to be a long answer, but, or it can be a long answer. how do you, like, okay, well, I guess, can you forgive if you're still in that situation? Or you still feel like you're being, you know, impacted, or you're still in the situation. And how do you, what's the process of forgiving the past?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's so much harder to forgive if you're still in the situation. And an example that I have is like, so my mom is very emotionally dysregulated still at 51. It's very difficult to deal with. And she was at my house yesterday and I was upstairs and I was working and my son like threw a toy or something. And my mother was like, say sorry, say sorry, say sorry, say sorry. No, you can't play with your toys until you say sorry. And it was just like, oh my God, I was like losing it. Upset. I was like, this isn't helpful. And I went downstairs and I was like, this is what she used to do to me too. Okay. And this is what forgiveness looks like, at least on I went downstairs and I said, Mom, you making him say sorry just because it will make you feel better isn't teaching him anything. You are going to have him have a word come out of his mouth that will help your emotion, but he doesn't even know what that word means. He doesn't have the emotion of being sorry. So I'm surprised that you want him to say that, because it's only helping you. And that's a little selfish. Instead, just try to teach him. Don't just get him to say a word that makes you feel like he feels sorry when he doesn't. And she got super upset. And she's like, fine, I'm just going to watch him anymore on weekends, and I'm just going to leave, and I must just be the worst mother in the whole world. And just this emotional dysregulation, because my child was emotionally dysregulated. And I was sitting there and I was like, this is why I used drugs and alcohol when I was a teenager. This is why I was so emotionally dysregulated for so long. And I'm still in the situation, but my mind went, but I am in control of my body and my mind in this moment. And I am able to not only set a boundary for myself, I'm also able to set a boundary for my son. And that's saying, I still love you as a human being, mother. I do. But you are an emotionally dysregulated person. And I just can't have that emotional dysregulation affect my child. So I'm going to set a boundary. And if you're going to be you and leave, that's fine. And I used to, in the beginning of me, you know, because my child's 2.5, I used to be like, how am I going to navigate this? How the hell am I going to like have my mother be my child's grandmother? And it really is just about accepting the person for who they are. If they're not going to change, that's what forgiveness looks like. I have accepted you for who you are, but that doesn't mean that it's okay. And I'm going to continue to set boundaries to keep myself and my family safe. That's what it looks like. You can't change the person. You have to decide how much accessibility do they have to you? What do the boundaries look like? And once you can really regulate yourself in that moment, instead of me being like, get out of my house, I can't believe you. I'm like, this, you're acting like a child. And I already have one to deal with. I need you to leave and not do that again. Thank you. You know, just like, it's just so much. Once you can self-regulate when the dysregulation is in your environment that's always been there, you know that you've made progress and that you are actually on the path to forgiveness. It's when you don't hold it in you anymore. That's what forgiveness is. That's what it is. Mm.
That's powerful. I love it. I'm going to ask another question. Yeah. It was submitted from the community. Like most people, I think, and definitely most toddlers, I really struggle with feeling a loss of control or agency in my day. But life with a toddler feels out of control, starting with never knowing if he'll or we'll have a good night's sleep, to when he'll wake up and I need to be on, to just never knowing if I'll have time during his quiet time to get anything done. I forced myself to wake up earlier and work out, so I feel some control of the start of the day. But any other tips for working through the lack of control feeling?
I love this question, because my personal response would be my professional response. I have the exact same issue that this parent is saying, struggling with a loss of control or agency. And after having my child, specifically when he became like 1.5 and he could really start to create his own life schedule, I started getting extremely, extremely overwhelmed. Like, I am a very controlling, anxious person internally, not externally. I know who I am, and that sometimes I don't act like that. And I do the same thing. I wake up at 4:00 in the morning so that I can work out, wash my face, brush my teeth, put on comfortable clothes, and then my son wakes up between 5:15 and 5:30. Now, would I like to sleep in until 7:30? Yeah, I would. But I don't do that, because what I know as a therapist and as a human being is that you can only control what you can control. And when you try to start controlling something that's not controllable, like a toddler, I mean, you can control a toddler, but not if you want them to be like happy and healthy, like a lot in the way that you want to control them, then you have to start to accept the things that you can't control. And it really is just, it's this radical acceptance of, I don't know what my day is going to look like. And I might want to get 10 things done on my list. I'm going to note them. I'm going to list them down 1 through 10, and I'm going to hope to get number 1 done. goal is going to be to get number one done, not all 10. And I'm going to learn how to allow my body and my mind to still be safe and healthy and calm in whatever way that I need to. So if I don't know what time my son is going to wake up, but I know that he hasn't woken up before 5 o'clock in a while, then I'm going to get up at 4. Do I want to get up at 4? No. But luckily he went to sleep at 8, so I can go to sleep at 9 instead of staying up and watching TV. It's like we just, having kids is a sacrifice, and sacrifices don't have to hurt as much as they do if you accept that they're happening. Like it's just, yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, like, managing expectations and also learning about your child and, like, you know, a schedule and you know what's typical for your toddler child. And so you kind of know what to expect, but you also are going to expect, or you also know that your 2-year-old is a 2-year-old and there are going to be things that you don't expect that are going to happen. And letting go, I think sometimes, yeah, like you said, letting go of the things that you can't control and focusing on the things that you can control. Like I remember, like, in the classroom all the time, it became a thing for me. Like, there's no point in me getting mad about something that just happened that I wasn't expecting. Like, it happened. Yeah. And I would tell myself this all the time. It happened. Okay, what now? Right?
Yeah.
Instead of just getting so caught up in the, oh my goodness, there's so much water on the floor. How could you unplug it? It's going to take so much time for us to clean this up. And all the water on the floor. Someone's going to slip and fall. And what if someone, instead of that, like, there's water on the floor. Okay. Yeah. Now what can we do? Oh, we can clean it up. And this event doesn't have to be a negative thing. I can make sure it's a negative thing, but I can also, by the way that I respond, turn it into something that might even be a positive experience where now we're spending 5 minutes and we're getting towels and paper towels and we're cleaning up together, but maybe now it's a bonding experience. And maybe now they're learning about how, you know, water absorbs in a paper towel. And maybe now that they're learning a new skill of, like, how to clean up a mess and, you know, all of these things. And maybe now I've also learned about my child or children, whatever, to maybe review that rule, be proactive about what happened, or to teach, or there's some kind of unlearned skill.
I also think there's things like, and I'm smiling a little because it's like just human beings, just our brain. It's obnoxious. The things that our brain adheres to and then ignores, it's like, it's trying to keep us alive, but it's like actually making it very difficult for us to be happy, which is annoying. I'm sure we all think our brains are really annoying. But like, I think that parents, it's like, we want our children, most parents want their children to stick into the mold of the life that we already have or that society wants us to have. So like it's like one morning, my toddler, when he was 2, he refused to put pants on. He refused to put pants on. And I was like, okay, fine. You're not going to wear pants. We're going to go to the movies and you're not going to wear pants. But I brought the pants in the backpack in case he gets cold, because that's the concern as a parent, right? The movie theaters are air conditioned and he's going to be cold if he's not wearing pants. So we want to solve the problem before it happens. But the kid doesn't understand the problem. The kid doesn't understand that most people in society wear pants and that it's air conditioned in movie theaters, so we should probably put pants on. Doesn't understand any of that. And we're trying to be like, just put the pants on because we have a full understanding of why, when what we could do instead is be like, okay, yeah, are people going to think it's weird my kid doesn't have pants on? Sure. But like, what's more important? Me bonding with my child and being like, okay, fine. You don't have to wear pants right now, whatever. And then you're listening to them versus listening to the imaginary judgments that other people are going to have on you as a parent. Instead, listen to the actual emotions and desires that are coming from your child and bring the pair of pants. And when your child gets cold, be like, let's put your pants on.
And, you know, I think even that experience is more powerful than even if we do get them to get their pants on. Cause, you know, like I may like suggest one thing. Yeah. We can sing a song about putting pants on.
Right.
We can, you know, hop in the pants or routine.
Yep.
You know, maybe there's a bunch of different ways that we could get the pants on the child. But I think the experience of going into the theater and it being cold and being uncomfortable and be like, ooh, like, I don't like this. I want pants. Mm-hmm. It's so much more of a powerful experience, yep. learning experience than us getting those pants on. So, you know, not to say that I think that every parent, you know, I think that those, that's one of those decisions you're going to have to kind of choose.
Totally.
What one, choose your battles and choose, like, you know, what your, you know, boundaries are going to be are, and like what's really worth it. Like, you could also choose to, like, I don't think this would be effective for a 2-year-old, choose to, like, not go to the movie theaters. I don't think that's right. And I think you just would not be going to the movie theaters. But yeah, I do think that's more powerful. Real quick, before we wrap up, I'm going to try to squeeze in one more question.
Yeah.
As a parent formally diagnosed with anxiety and clinical depression, I'm constantly trying to check in on whether my concerns or projections, my own anxieties, people-pleasing, and unhealthy perfectionism, or if they are rooted in valid worry. It's a bit easier right now when they're little, but I know it will only grow more difficult. Any advice on how to combat putting my stuff or how to combat putting my stuff onto my kids? I edited that and that messed me up. I'm in therapy and medicated. It would be my worst nightmare. My greatest goal is for them to be fulfilled, self-assured, completely for them. For them to know that I love them in all their forms. But I'm scared my anxiety will get the best of me. Very good question. Go ahead and answer.
First thing that comes up for me is you ask yourself in any given moment, am I responding based off of fear or love? Am I responding based off of fear or love? I think that that's like that's a huge, huge, huge thing, because often we don't want our kids to experience the same life that we did. We're afraid that they're going to. So we make decisions differently than if we just loved them in that moment without the fear. I think that that's like a huge part of it. And yeah, I'm going to stop there and see what you think.
How do you know, because we know anxiety, fear, anger, it's all, these are all important, meant to protect us, and there are healthy levels to it, right? Mm-hmm. You know, maybe I do have a fear of, kind of like we talked about earlier, maybe I have a fear of the, you know, aunt being really nasty and towards my child, or maybe I have a fear of, you know, they're going to be in an environment where it's going to be, you know, that's going to affect their development some way. You know, there is some level of healthy fear and anxiety, right?
Yeah.
I think that my opinion is that I think that parents and teachers tend to typically go overboard on it. Typically, it's not in the healthy zone. But how do you know if you're in the healthy zone? This is a healthy fear. Or this is, okay, I'm anxious, but this is a healthy amount of anxious to be, or I feel this way. Is it about just acknowledging the emotion and not necessarily acting about it? Is it about regulating, getting to a logical part of our brain so that we can think through it logically and not just react with emotion? You know, how do you know if it's healthy or not?
It's super hard to tell. I mean, because I just, it really, like, some examples from that person would have been really helpful, because it could look like anything in this person's specific situation.
Yourself. I think it does go back to asking yourself that question, checking in, like, is this, am I doing this because, and I think a lot of parents would say, like, oh, well, I love them. It's, I have this fear because I love them so much, right? Mm-hmm. It's, I think, kind of checking in and getting out of our emotions, because that's when we make our irrational decisions, just like children do, right?
Right.
And trying to regulate and thinking and try to think about it, trying to think about different things more logically can help us identify if it's a healthy, anxiousness or healthy fear or healthy anger. And I think even just, I think what's healthy about it is that it's a signal for us to check in with ourselves so that we can make a decision that's not just emotionally and reactively driven. Well, it was great. Like, I'm going to let you, I know that our time is over. Any last words you'd like to say before you leave?
I think I just want every parent that's listening to understand that whatever difficulties that you're having, again, it's because you are literally trying to raise a brain and a body while having not a full understanding of how to raise your own brain and your own body over time. We are so incredibly complex that parenting will never be easy. And you actually won't meet your child for a very long time because they are not who they're going to be for a really long time. And your child's going to constantly change as you are constantly changing. Nothing's really going to be stable at all times. Nothing's going to be permanent at all times or in your control at all times. Regulate yourself, learn about yourself, and then it'll be easier to regulate and learn about your child.
Powerful. Thank you so much for coming on.
They are. And please let them be who they are. Let them be who they are. Don't let who they are, like, let them be who they are. It's just, you are who you are. They are who they are. Just please, 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 please do not form human beings to be what you want them to be. Let them be who they are. We need as many unique individuals in this world that we can possibly have.
What's my name? What's my name?